Good afternoon. You're listening to 91.9 FM, WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin. This is the Heart of Wellness show with hosts Drs. Paul and Paula Grenier. Today's guest is Fred Anderson. He has a master's in teaching and applied anthropology, and we are super excited to share this hour chatting it up with Fred. The other day, we were at a dinner party together, and him and I were talking, just, you know how you are at dinner parties, just getting kind of social and having some conversation. And the topic was really, really interesting to me. And so I said, hey, Fred, you want to join us in the studio this week?
Absolutely. Why not?
So welcome. We're super excited to have you.
Thank you. Here.
Yeah, so we were talking about our parents. That's what we were talking about.
Yes.
And the bad choices they made.
Well, just our aging parents. And, you know, maybe you want to give our listeners maybe a little backdrop of, you know, your background and how the topic we got talking about parents and all that, but and applied anthropology. Paul and I were like, what is applied anthropology? So maybe just give us a little tutorial.
Great. Yeah, there's you might say there's two forms of anthropology. And one, the one that got the start in whatever Europe or United States is basically anthropology for the sake of doing anthropology, as the field was getting started. You know, let's say it's the Egyptologist and the
study of the past.
Correct. And in ancient cultures, classic cultures, you know, when you hear about the classics, you think about ancient Greece, you think about ancient Egypt, and a lot of the field of anthropology, and you could say there was a different course for European anthropologists as there were for American anthropologists, but they basically were learning for the sake of learning and also trying to capture the history of people before they disappeared, particularly when it came to cultures.
Okay, so yeah, so for listeners out there who might not have had anthropology as a background word, that's the study of people and their cultures.
Right.
Anthropology, just,
yeah.
Okay.
Anthro-humans.
Okay.
So from a wellness standpoint, this comes out for me is like, well, if you want to study the past, but you don't want to hang out in the past, and that's if you want to live a really good life, you want to be in the now, right?
Well,
but if you want to change the future, you got to learn from the past and say how, or, you know, what can we do better? What can we do that worked? What didn't work? Ideally.
Right.
Okay, well,
but
we
as humans continue to...
Paul's jumping ahead.
Repeat.
You're jumping ahead in the course.
Oh, boy, I didn't know there was an
outline.
Tell you this.
So the one difference between say, the ivory tower study of anthropology, applied anthropology, is largely more the looking at real-world problems and trying to use our study of humankind and their past, where they've been, where they're going, to solve modern problems, and that could be civil problems, it could be economic problems, it could be physical problems. You know, if you wanted to loosely break down anthropology into its four categories, there's cultural anthropology, physical anthropology, linguistic anthropology, study of languages, how they came about, and potentially where they're going. And then there's archaeology. And the archaeology is the study of the material remains of past cultures and civilizations.
Cool.
And then those all break down into other subcategories. For example, I studied archaeology, and I focused more on prehistoric archaeology rather than historic archaeology. However, the firms that I work for, whenever you find a site, you're never just saying, no, we're not going to look at this because it's prehistoric. It's you take what you get.
So archaeology, okay, so archaeology falls under anthropology in a sense.
Correct.
I didn't realize that.
It's one of the
okay, I didn't realize that was a subculture of that. So yeah, so real world problems trying to look at the past and the history of humans to look at our real world problems. And that's where you're going with that, Paul, I think, already. You were already such a, he's such an advanced thinker, Fred. You probably know us about Paul that. He just jumps right to the heart of the matter. Whereas I like the little bit of a crescendoing buildup, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where that falls. But if you were to, you know, again, your subcategories, you might split at the moment this table into its own unique category, because you're looking at physical anthropology,
which is what's physical?
Physical is the it's actually a really broad category, because it's from the primatology and studying primates and all, but also our ancestors. So the evolutionary tree, you know, where do we fall on that? How are we connected to primates and to the other hominids that we've found the physical fossil evidence for, Australopithecus, Homo erectus, some of these other species that you may have heard of watching your episodes of Nova or whatever. But then what do we have for the physical evidence of ourselves, Homo sapiens sapiens? At some point, then, we're talking about how we, those various peoples develop societies and culture, and then what they did for themselves and the development of that culture, how they governed themselves, what they did to their environment, how they crafted the environment to suit their needs and or interacted with it.
That was culture, you said. What people did in their societies. Okay.
Yeah, and there's of course a blend there, and that's kind of what Paul and I were getting at a little bit the other day when we're talking about, okay, so if human beings are living in harmony, let's say a somewhat harmonious relationship with their environment, they're adapting tools and using, you know, clothing, physical tools, building structures, et cetera, to provide for themselves. But at one point, they might be doing something that's not good for their health or good for the longevity of their culture, of their people. And that's kind of, you know, of course, mm-hmm. where we're at now in many different ways.
Right. So we're saying, what are we as a species on this planet doing to our environment in this day and age, 2024, or we could backtrack to... Yeah. Whenever Gaylord Nelson got Earth Day going, we're saying, hey, what are we doing?
What are we doing to impact our health, our longevity, not only as a people, as a culture, as a political group or a species? And then, of course, Paul, bringing it back to, you know, briefly what you're saying about our happiness, our longevity.
Bringing it back to the now, too, is a cultural. What have we done more recently that is... definitely changing. We watched the Blue Zone the other day, which is talking about the longevity, the longest living humans on the planet right now, and what are they doing differently? What are they doing culturally? What are they doing? How are they eating? What choices are they making?
Right.
The choices and consequences. It's how does that affect us, and what can we learn? They got the caveman diet. They're realizing that really works for some people, where they're just eating what they can forage or what they can do, the real food, in other words.
I want to let our listeners know the Blue Zones, because it's kind of a buzz thing out there. If you haven't seen it on Netflix, I think, right? Did we say it was on Netflix?
Netflix.
A man named Dan Bettner did this documentary, and he's with National Geographic, right?
Sponsored by National
Geographic. So it's kind of Paul and I just watched one episode of it, or we kind of found it. It was the one on a little island outside of Greece called Ikaria. Ikaria? And so that was one of them. But there's like five Blue Zones. I don't have Netflix.
It. I think there are more than five. There was an episode we watched where they went to at least two in that one. It's a four episode show.
Okay.
But I think
okay.
they.
So
yeah.
it's worth. So listeners, as you're going out this hour with us, you might want to take that little note that, you know, if you're looking for something healthy to watch out there, if you're going to put yourself in front of a screen, this could be very educational and interesting to learn about what other cultures on this planet are doing to, you know, have longevity on the planet and good health along the way, right? So Blue Zones, yeah.
And that to me is the big part of it, anthropology. Let's just go back three grandpas. Let's go back three grandpas and grandmas.
Just three grandpas and grandmas?
You want to go back where?
I want to go as far back as Fred can take us to learn about
what it means today.
Well, just, yeah, like, what can we learn?
I do want to apply it to the day. So if you guys are getting too far out there, I'm going to bring you back.
We can keep it snappy.
We have a whole hour, Dr. Paul. Yeah, okay.
Create it here, just for the sake, little context. So when I was in school, they decided that Homo sapiens, the fossil evidence, had our branch of the tree, or our branch of the branch, which you're thinking about what this structure looks like, was only 150,000 years old.
150,000.
Since then, and that was, I wrapped up my master's work in 2006. Since then, they have found more fossil evidence that now doubles that and pushes at least the fossil evidence for how long our species has been walking around the landscape to 300,000 years.
Walking around on planet Earth. Now we have new fossil evidence. Right.
So, and there's all sorts of interesting theories about, well, what happened to the other hominids walking the landscape? Was it red in tooth and claw, and, you know, humans basically beat out Neanderthals, or Homo erectus, some of these other species that are around Europe? Or did they mate with them to some degree? And what can we find?
What do we call them, human? You're
the
saying
genetic, yeah. And what's the genetic evidence for that? And that's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. But now let's fast forward to what did it look like that Homo sapiens were doing? And most people have heard of the term hunter gatherers, and that describes what they were doing. No matter what continent they were on, to some degree, probably looked a little different among the Inuit, you know, in the Arctic Circle,
right.
Versus in Southeast Asia, versus here in North America.
They had different clothes design.
Right. They had different tools.
Environmental needs.
Different tools.
As far as January in Wisconsin.
Well, and you don't need a fishing pole if you live in the desert.
Right.
Right. So, but essentially they were hunting and gathering for their foods, and they might have been mobile and lived within a certain range, what they would move throughout the seasons, depending, again, where they were. And they had small family units, probably 10 people, slightly more. And now you're getting into, you know, whatever they could sustain based on what their resources were. And it isn't until you get to the domestication of grains and animals, like sheep. I think sheep is one of the first domesticated animals in the Fertile Crescent in the Middle East.
Mm.
Then there were goats at some point, well before there were grains. Southeast Asia, they domesticated, I think, something similar, sheep, maybe pig at some point. It's been a little while since I've read about those numbers. But we're talking about 10,000 years ago.
About 10,000 years ago?
And now you have a food source, and you have a milk source, and you have a protein source, and you have things that happen to people. But once they then also domesticate grains, depending on where they are, they settle down and their numbers grow. They have more time on their hands. There's a diversification of who does what, of labor. You can get into Marxist theory here. Marxist theory starts saying that once you get to a certain number of people, then you start having a division of labor, and there are people who are actually doing the labor, and then there's maybe some middle ground people, and then there's some people who are administrating and telling other people what to do. And where you go with Marx. But anyhow, the hunter-gatherers were basically the way of life, roughly. So
it's probably pretty organic.
12,000 years ago.
That's the original farming practice. What's it called with Marx? Permaculture. That's original permaculture, you know, where your waste products are all refurbishing the land, and all the animals and humans are living as one, right? In that process of, you know, it was pure natural because it wasn't, it was just, there's no grains, like you said, there's no splicing of plants. You know, you're
no,
just
this eating. Is way back. So yeah. If humans have been shown to be walking there for 300,000 years, and now we're fast forwarding to just 12,000 years ago. So all those years, that's what they were doing. Yeah. As far as what evidence has shown through archaeological digs, yeah, basically. Right. The tools that were found, the whatever that...
And it's different around, you know, which I pick a continent, and then what a culture that we know about was there, we would consider an ancient civilization, and mm-hmm. when they had domesticated animals or grains, and were settling down into large groups, and then maybe little city-states, et cetera.
Because you had mentioned that they had done a dig, and then all of a sudden someone, like, quote-unquote, dug deeper and then found so much more evidence. Like, somewhere you were saying that that's when they realized, wow.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, here in North America, the ideas about how North America was populated and which direction they came from. Did they come from the east? Did they come from the west across Beringia, the land bridge? And what was the timing of that based on the last glacial maximum and when glaciers were the thickest? And
Beringia was Bering Strait? Is that Beringia?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Bering Strait.
Right, exactly.
Alaska, up there? Okay, yeah. For those of us who don't have the lingo, Beringia.
Beringia.
There's a theory that, you know, people
walked
the from there.
That's the landmass that was there.
Right, is the theory they walked all the way from Africa up through... No.
No, these were people who had, over whatever period of time, had already... now we're getting into some good evolutionary theory, and I'm not the thickest with this, but there's an out of Africa theory that most of the species of which we have connected ancestry to or not originated in Africa, and some of these species made it out faster on a different timeline, to the point where they were over in Siberia. They're in Asia.
Somehow they got way up there.
Right. Okay. And they spread fast, so to speak, compared to the creep of other bipedal species that didn't move very fast or very far.
I'm thinking of, if you could picture, like, you know, how people make time lapses, you know?
Right.
You could time lapse the first dudes or dudettes or whoever was doing what, and right. time lapsing them all across the planet.
Well, it's not right to think that they all, one family group, made it across Beringia, you know, like on a really long hike and never went home. It's more like a family group of 10 or 20 or whatever the numbers were, you know, outgrew the area that they were in and said, hey, y'all should branch off and go that direction, and we'll meet again at springtime, you know. And then they just kind of just kept moving and moving and moving, expanding mm-hmm. into another valley, you might say, until they are in North America. Well, with the coastal migration theory, which has really gained a lot of momentum in the last 15 years, there's evidence that they weren't just walking across the land bridge, that these were marine-adapted people and adapted to marine resources, and also maybe had boats or some crude...
Isn't that cool? I had never heard that you were saying the other night, that they may have floated here instead of walked.
Yeah, and probably right? skipped along the edges where they were free of glaciers, and then explored various coves or various river valleys, right. and then found their way inland when they, like, well, there's a major river
here. And that's coming from the
here.
Other way, you're saying? Not from the Bering Strait, but from...
No, same direction.
Same direction, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Same direction.
From the west.
But they maybe just didn't walk. Yeah. Someone got smart and floated.
Well, I'm going to throw a dinosaur bone and a gene splice into the mix here.
I figure this is going to come up in this conversation.
Machine,
before it gets juicy.
Okay, Human by Design, which is a Greg Braden book, who is a spiritual anthropologist, if I am correct. He talks about, like...
I mean, he has background, right, in anthropology.
He
I don't know his whole title.
I think he is, but he calls himself a spiritual anthropologist, I do believe is how he pronounced it. But he talks about... the new science, the new understanding with the DNA, that it's impossible for this theory to complete. Now, maybe the Earth has evolved in time, but humans, according to this new understanding, were implanted somehow on this Earth.
This gets juicy.
So which goes beyond, you know, now we have to start thinking more multi-universe, you know, the galaxies and the multiple planets and how many other species are out there besides us, and is there some input from this other world? And they talk about that the frontal lobe of a human is the key that there's no evidence, no physical evidence to show. In fact, there's physical evidence to show that that wasn't the case, that the frontal lobe evolved. That is the one splice. And they actually have the DNA splice. I don't know which one it is.
So, there's Cro-Magnon man or something, and then I don't know the order, maybe. But there's somewhere in that
where there's all of a sudden a
where it's
jump.
Kinda like there's a jump there, and they're like, well, yeah, we'll just overlook that maybe because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the frontal, the ability of the human to view themselves, the view that the frontal lobe is where the love, the connection, the empathy, the sympathy is all in. And thinking of empathy, WDRT always needs your empathy your love. Just turn on the radio, and we always appreciate you choosing WDRT 91.9. There's nothing but community here and connection. And we're younger than 200,000 years.
Right. I want to remind our listeners that we have a guest in the studio, Paul.
Oh.
Fred Anderson's with us.
Oh, I forgot about him.
Just for you.
We're talking about spiritual anthropology. This guy's back in the Stone Ages.
So yeah, right. So we had a really, you know, I mean, I know anthropology you could talk for days about, right? But we had a nice first of the hour introduction to anthropology as we've been taught and known it, right? And what Dr. Paul has jumped into is, and I was wondering if this was ever brought up with what we're about to talk about now with this new data, because if you were in school in 19, what'd you say?
2002 to 2006.
2002, 2006, in that era?
Yep.
Just not that long ago, really, sir.
Feels like it was.
Doesn't feel like forever? Like, we were in school in the 80s. I know you're so much younger than us. I don't know.
It's about 100 gray hairs ago. I know that. Well, and for me, I had hair back then, I think.
Some would say that I went to school too many times.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. So. I just took little breaks until I realized I really needed some money now.
So, I need to really one of those.
You know, you throw these dinosaurs into it, and a lot of theories get thrown out of there.
Are you saying a dinosaur is an idea or an actual dinosaur?
It's a real thing. I mean, like, here it is. So that's millions of years
ago. By the way, that's paleontology.
Okay, paleontology.
That's
okay.
A different study.
That is a different study. But it's like, okay, what about skipping there? When were, you know, did it come? You know, did you have that evolution, or was we had this planet that has had multiple extinctions through its time? And it's like, are we? You know, they talk about we're heading into a somewhat of a human generated extinction in the process, but that could be off
have
too.
You heard of the sixth mass extinction that we're worried about? That
we're not helping things. Yeah. I mean, the dinosaurs didn't have any say whatsoever in the massive, you know, asteroid that,
because they didn't have a frontal lobe
that came.
they might have been able to hide from the asteroid.
Well, they had some frontal lobe, it just didn't look like ours.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Had they known there's an asteroid coming?
Yeah, I don't know what they would have said.
Is that the theory? What happened with dinosaurs, that the asteroid hit the planet and just shifted
everything?
Yeah, they've
got pretty good evidence for there was a massive asteroid. I think it lives. The crater is underwater, and it's somewhere now around the Yucatan.
Oh, really?
But what the science that they've developed of what happened with that is that it hit and caused such an explosion that put so much soot into the air that they basically had their nuclear winter. It circumvented the globe, and they found that ash in various landforms around the globe.
Can you imagine that?
Blacked out the sun for a long time, and it basically caused the mass extinction of the dinosaurs.
So everything.
Not everything. There are the ancestors of the dinosaurs still live in certain reptiles, and I think alligators and a few other birds. Birds are directly related to dinosaurs.
To me, I think we're going to get to see some really fun stuff come out over the next 20, 30 years because our understanding, our ability to the technology to be able to get into some of this DNA, to be able to go back and see that they're talking about a 2,600-year flip of the magnetic field.
Yep.
You know, that is, could be some of the extinction process. It goes along with that.
That is happening, or that
did happen? Well, that is happening. The Mayan calendar, talking about that. And it's not exactly on that date, but these cycles that our Earth is in, you know, for that matter, our solar system, our galaxy, what you know, we have to think bigger now because we can see bigger.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
we got to go
that's
beyond
true.
Our own Neanderthal brain and see that, wow, what can we do? We now know that we get a brand new body every year. We get 50,000 new cells a second. You get 3 new hearts a year, 4 new hearts, or 120 days. Got to do the math. 3 new hearts. So a heart cell lives about 120 days. So we get new skin, new body. It's like how the choices we make as humans, we now know that we know about the field. We our field gets smaller when we're in anger and fear and frustration and judgment. And when we are in love and gratefulness and peace and empathy, our field, they can measure it, actually expands to where we can affect the field around us. We always used to think this was just dark, the dark matter, the darkness. What's in between the planet and another planet? You know, what's space? Space is just empty. No, it's not. They now see that this is all frequency, and we have the chance to change that. If we are evolving as anthropologists or anthropology, what are we doing? Are we realizing that thought matters more than anything? Consciousness matters, our choices we make. And these blue zones we're talking about, we actually can change the path of humans, our own human body, if we make different choices. We as a community can. We as a global community can change our outcome by the choices we make.
So that's a good segue into another thing that you and I were talking about the other night, Fred, was like our aging parents, right? And this idea that, well, just that, you were talking about the life expectancy and has it changed much or whatever. What were we chatting about? Do you remember we were chatting about that? Just your background from that piece.
Yeah.
And then we can lead into that.
Yeah, I don't want to go back into the whole anthropology thing, but right, two things. One is that we're living longer than we ever have before. I mean, the average life expectancy of any of our
relatives,
right? Yeah, right. Let's go back a couple thousand years. It doesn't matter whether you're living in Egypt or Ecuador. I just learned that they've got another site that they've found with LIDAR that has at least 10,000 people living in a location of the Amazon basin that they never would have suspected was there before. They knew there was a site, but people were living there in much larger numbers than they knew. But any one of these locations around our globe, people are only living till 40, 45, you know, before they're taken out by whatever, their environment, their disease or accidents, et cetera. So now we're fast forward to us being Americans living in North America, and we have got a good grasp on the sciences and what's happening in disease, et cetera. And now we're using technology, and we're attacking some of the viruses that used to be an equalizing factor for us, smallpox, some of these things that you and I don't have to worry about right now. Mm-hmm. So now people are living longer. The evidence we have of that, of course, was when we decided to. What were we talking about?
You mentioned that like a tooth abscess would take someone out in the past.
Absolutely.
And now they figure out how to help someone with a tooth abscess.
Like, yeah, there was no dental health.
No awareness of that.
People died of abscessed teeth and disease like crazy. You can find it in
the records,
their skulls, in their teeth. It gets worn down teeth, and you know, people died.
And like now we know to pull it out or to put a new one in or whatever we know how to do now in our culture.
So now we're living till, I think the average life expectancy of a white male, according to the American Medical Association, is still and has been for decades or at 75. And that's why, you know, they were initially saying you should retire at 65 because you can live on your retirement funds, these government funds, for about 10 years and be comfortable. For women, it's 78. Women, again, I don't know if they have the data for people of color, but you know.
In a sense.
There you go.
Around
but
there.
We are now, look at how many people we know, and I'll put all of my parents into that category, living well past or 75 and 78, mm-hmm. and our bodies wear out, and there's things that get us, and that's what we're dealing with. You and I were talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about that. Like,
how do we now, as the adults who are also in our golden years, helping our parents who are in their really golden years deal with memory loss and dementia and Alzheimer's it's not easy.
It's not easy. And one of the conversations that Paul and I were having since I talked to you is like, okay, so this is like kind of America's model right now. We all know about this. The, no, I don't want to say overcrowded nursing homes, but you know what I'm saying? Like the baby boomers have aged. So many people are elderly. And unfortunately, in our society, they are aging in a way that their life is not always so fulfilling, right? Their health is deteriorating. We have
two pharmaceuticals per decade after 30. So 30, 40,
that, that's
50.
That's the stat that people tend to have to
in,
add.
In America. This is not the whole world. This is America. We consume the majority of all pharmaceuticals in the world. 280 million of us or wherever
that's
in
crazy.
America. That we consume, it's in the 60 to 70% range. So, you know, the amount of pills we're on, the bad food we eat, the obesity that's coming up. So we are getting sicker.
Yeah.
The process of like, what is, you know, this is why looking at the blue zones, what are they doing differently? What are they doing differently to bring this? What can we learn from the past?
Yeah.
At least recent past. We can go back into some of the, you talked about that one guy that lived to a 200 and he recorded in the 1600s.
Yeah, in Greg Braden's book, what is it called, Human by Design? Yeah. Read that title, Paul, because it's a really good book. It might be something.
Human by Design, Greg Braden, that's all it's
subtitle.
From Evolution by Chance to Transformation by Choice.
Right, so in that book, I was reading last night in preparation for our conversation today, was that, you know, there are people who have lived well beyond that expectancy of the American expectancy, and one gentleman was in China, and they have records where he was born in 1630-something, 1670, but he died in 1933. And he was in the Chinese military, so they have records like when he signed up, what his name was, when he was here, and they would send him birthday cards, you know. Happy 100th birthday. Oh, he's still alive. Happy 120.
Hey, here's another one.
For reals. And they have document that this dude lived for 250 years.
And they got
years.
Plenty that are...
Then you also can go like biblically, right, when you think of the biblical stories, like these people fathering people and they're hundreds of years old. And so something, you know, something shifted. Something there's two there's I feel like there's two story two stories that
there's quality of life too you can live life and then quality of life.
But there's the story that our life expectancy is longer now, but yet in a sense some of these folks have figured out the plan a long time ago to live really long, but most of us don't know that plan.
No.
And then I'm going to get a little and there might be some people running certain industries that might not want us to know that plan, because let's talk about it, medicine and drugs is a business, right? You know, they talk about that, like the elderly, that's a business for those folks, right? It's like, let's
they're
keep
not
them
looking
on
for
their
cures,
path.
Not looking for
We're talking
cures,
about the pharmaceutical companies.
Long, yes.
I'll just spit it out there. We're talking about the pharmaceuticals. Because the more people they can keep on drugs, and good for them, that's good for business, right? So there's all kinds of like little undertows about keeping people healthy, right? Does that make sense?
Well, again, there's two different things. There's healthcare and there's a disease business, a disease care. The disease care and healthcare. And healthcare is choices you make yourself.
Yeah.
And that's why you go to these blue zones and you say, what are they doing differently? And just from what the one episode we saw, social connection is one big one. So we're talking not only...
hence our dinner party.
Oh, and move... And,
yeah.
Right?
Chemicals in our food, chemicals in our... medicines, chemicals in our clothes, in wherever we're at. We got chemicals in our air, water, food, everything. We also have electronics everywhere that was not in our grandparents' days, for sure our grandparents, but our great-grandparents. They didn't have that process. So their quality of health, there's some great things that have helped us, you know, with new knees, new hips. You know, these people are really rocking with these... there's a lot of new technology, but some new technology is really messing with our ability to live a quality of life a long time.
I got to add something to what you just said. The one episode I know you watched, what the other component, at least for the Okinawa ones, was movement.
Yeah.
And same when you get to the other, there's another episode where I think they take you to Greece. And one of the things about the people living in this, on this island, in this region, in Greece, is is they all walk.
And the attitude that they walk uphill.
They walk uphill.
They walk uphill. It wasn't all flat.
They move.
So in North Dakota, you got to find some steps.
Yeah.
Going back to Paul's roots.
Well, I watched personally my
Keep
dad
moving.
When he broke his foot about 4 years ago. He just died a few months ago at 89. But when he broke his leg, he had a mailbox that was only 20 yards from his house. He would get into his big pickup, back it out, drive all the way around the block, pull his mail out, and drive it back into the mailbox. I said, Dad, get out there and get your mail. Well, he broke his leg by walking down that and slipped on the ice.
He was gun shy.
Yeah, I know, but this is the summer. I said, get out there. You're walking out to get in your truck. Go out there. But that was the beginning of the end.
There's twigs in the way.
Yeah.
Stuff, yeah. Loose gravel.
Yeah. So that process of being able to move, and socially, they got together all the time, every day having coffee, going for a walk. Well, they walked everywhere. Oh, wherever they went, they walked. And the movement, the sitting in front of a TV, sitting in front of a computer, sugar, drugs, and all the chemicals in the food is creating a maybe a shorter life, but if not a shorter life, a lower quality of life. And that's the sadness I'm watching just in our lifetime, watching, and even just in our 40 years of being healthcare practitioners, is you're watching the just decay of a society. Like, wow, now you're seeing 5-6 year olds. Like, you go to a kindergarten and you're watching, like, 30% of them are overweight. Right. You would never see that.
I mean, we didn't talk about the big elephant in the world, screens,
yeah,
computers,
oh yeah,
phones. Well, television. Sorry, here we go again. It seems like we often end up on the same rant, but you know, when televisions came into our communities, it changed everything.
Right.
People no longer sat on their porches chatting, right?
Or
maybe air conditioning too, because you know, before air conditioning, people would sit outside on their porches when it was hot, and they'd visit with their neighbors, and then the TVs came into play,
yeah.
And people, you know, I'm going to sit inside and watch
a
show.
They lost the social opportunity.
So they lost that social sense.
The movement, kids being outside, running around, just natural. Now you almost got to play a sport to actually move. You know, just natural kids everywhere.
Well, and probably, Fred, like in the evolutionary sense too, like you said, when our tools, you can look back in history, like, you know, hunter-gathering, and you have a tool, something to take a rock and beat something with, and you'd have to physically do it. As our tools got better in farming, right? Now, Paul, your brother sits in a fancy, huge truck compared to taking, what's that thing called?
Scythe.
The scythe against the wheat.
The scythe.
Yeah.
So,
pronounce it.
Way back when we got domesticated to start farming, you know, these are the shifts in our technology and our societies that that was hard work up there. You'd have to knock all that down.
Well,
you
never saw a fat farmer.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Fat farmers everywhere. I'm not saying that in a rude way. I'm saying that in an awakening. It's like, wow, what are they doing? They're sitting in
the tractors.
They're adding chemicals in the process.
Right.
But
for real, you know, but that idea that the farming you used to think would be a very active lifestyle, and now it's weirdly sedentary. Like your brother, I remember this is 30 years ago, Stephen's like, I'm just going to make myself run out to the tractor. Like, he'd leave it parked really far away around the corner. So he'd get some exercise in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he'd pull up to the house, get in his tractor, eat his get to the tractor, drive around, and he would make himself.
Oh, yeah. We live in an area where you can see the differences in farming practices by driving by Amish farms and seeing, horse-drawn plows and, you know, and some of the tools they have.
Mm-hmm.
You sharpen them by hand, like you're talking about. But they were more simple, and they took more care, and there was more of an investment than in them. They're not as efficient as some of the equipment you can buy now.
Right.
You can buy tractors or tractor things, right?
Yeah.
Combines, et cetera, that might do two or three of the harvest. Things. And
two or three would be like,
yeah, you know, for 200 acres instead of just 40. Yeah.
Right.
Well, here you go. We did get snow here not too long back, and so I didn't have to go to the stupid gym. because I shovel snow for hours. It's like that was something productive. You know, it's sad to say that we are in a world that you have to literally create movement. You have to put in your day that I'm going to move. Mm-hmm. It's like you put into your day, it's time to listen to WDRT. So you click it on at, you can click it on at midnight and then wait till midnight comes again. And they say, oh, my radio's already on.
You but you love it at 1 p.m. on Sundays when you really love it.
Oh, of course. At least not when the NFL is gone. Oh. Off season, come and listen to WDRT 91.9, Heart of Wellness.
Yes, and thanks for joining us today. Again, if you're just joining us, you've missed a fascinating review of anthropology and humanity and where we were and where we are. We have Fred Anderson with us today. He has a master's in teaching in applied anthropology, which we also learned was part of, no, that archaeology is a part of anthropology.
Yeah.
And so we've been talking about Homo sapiens and people and where we were as a culture, as a people, what we've been doing all these hundreds of thousands of years,
yeah,
and where we are now.
Yeah, all of this is to get us to where we are now, I guess, right? Where are we now?
Where are we now?
And where are we going?
Where are we going? Great questions. What are we doing?
What can we do about it versus the things that are being done about it for us?
Exactly. Right.
Either through apathy or through intention.
Right.
Dan's got to think, where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? 1897 by Paul Gauguin?
Gauguin.
French.
French.
Gauguin. So this is where, to me, this is like modern anthropology. What are we going to do? What choices are we going to make?
What are people going to be looking at anthropologically about our society in the 2000s?
So they're going to, at that time,
hundreds of years from now,
they're going to find this frozen body that's like 400 pounds. I'm not saying this in a negative way. I'm saying it in some reality. And they're going to see this frozen body and they go, oh my God, what is this? And they're going to start doing tests on it and they're going to take some of that fat and they're going to have a huge technology then and they're going to check this out. It's like, what is this all about? And they go, wow, look at all these chemicals in here. Where'd they come from?
Why are there microplastics?
Why
are there microplastics in this tissue?
What is this? And then they're going to try to imagine what the world was like. And then they're going to find a frozen dump, you know, like city dump out there. And they're going to have this huge pile of garbage.
They'll be like, why didn't they just use clay pots?
Yeah, that's right. They should have gone back to the earth.
I mean,
we're laughing about it, but it is kind of scary, right?
It's
the sixth mass extinction that we're talking about potentially occurring on this planet with us, with our humanity, with our family, with our children, with our generations to come. What are we doing, right? What are we doing to ourselves?
Or here's another one. The ice melts, and they find this mile-high pile of tires. You know, like it's still there. It's like, no, what's this?
No, they find Wim Hof doing his cold water breathing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he's still there. He's frozen under the ice. That's a good one.
He's in his position.
Yeah, he's in his position. He's still breathing.
Breathe.
He said, damn. He says, when's this going to melt? I'm going to simplify it. Come down to, what do you do when you buy a vehicle and you're going to really take care of it? You got two people. One, they have no clue. They're not looking at the manual. They don't ever change the oil. They're just running that thing hard. They don't check the tires. They just keep going. Their air filters, they never change. That vehicle is going to last. They're going to start having problems around 50,000 miles. And if a vehicle today is meant to go 150 to 200, no problems. You know, no heavy problems as long as you take care of it. So that would be maybe somebody that's 75 at about 150, 175,000 miles. Well, there's a lot of people that are 20, 25 years younger than me, that, oh, it stinks getting old. I got these clients coming in, oh, I hate getting old. You're getting older, 25 years old, my joints hurt, the person's like 50 pounds overweight, their back hurts, they got all kinds of issues, they're on three drugs, you know, and it's like, wow, how do we take care of our vehicle?
I know how? By taking care of our telomeres, which is part of our DNA. Woohoo! So this is something that's found. It's called the telomere length is now accepted as a biological marker, a measurable sign for how long a human can be expected to live.
Huh.
This is out there. And I heard of this, but I hadn't really studied it. And then I reread it before our chat. So I was really excited to share this with you. That's what they found. They found that when they do these tests, there's a definite correlation between aging and your telomere length.
And the choices you make.
Yeah, so undeniable. So here's the deal. So longer telomeres are found in people with longer lifespans. Telomerase is the enzyme that builds, rejuvenates, and lengthens these telomeres in our DNA. And activating the body's telomerase stops further destruction, repairs the telomeres that are already damaged. So it's accepted as a marker. It's like, well, what can we do about it, right? There's all this research now going on about this. And they're finding that we absolutely have a say in our telomere length by the choices we make. So this is kind of like the Fountain of Youth, right? This is like the old Ponce de Leon, or this is like the movie Cocoon, right? When all the elder people are looking for an answer. And well, it's really about that. It's like, it's about our choices. And these choices can include exercise, you know, dietary, reducing your stress. All these strategies help to successfully slow and even reverse the telomere damage and cellular aging. So that's exciting. Coming right back to
you. So on top of that, epigenetics that we're now understanding. Environment matters more than genes. In other words, the whole epigenetics is that we have these genomes that you can be turned on and off by the choices we make, the thoughts we think, our lifestyle. And the greatest ones are the ones where they study these identical twins that got split up.
Yeah.
And showing the different environments and how they changed and what genes were turned on, what cancer genes, you know, whatever disease it is gets turned on and off. You can turn them off too. Like, mm-hmm. are we going to let go of our past experiences, our past pain, and are we going to choose different today?
So back to our conversation, Fred, we were talking about everybody, you know, we all around us in our society, we do get old. We see each other getting old. And we're like, yeah, we're just going to get there too. But then I also have conversations, and Paul's been reading things about different people saying, wait a minute, we have a say in this matter. So I don't know that we have the answers in this hour to guarantee that you're not going to get older than me, but I do know, and I feel strongly, that if we choose to do the healthiest steps we can do in the way of our stress levels, our diet, our thoughts, it's going to give us, one, like a healthier everyday life. You know, there's the idea, like he said, about functioning every day until that moment is that we pass.
Right.
As compared to just deteriorating, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's the big one there. That what's it going to be like along the way?
Right. And I think, and clearly this is what you're doing by having a show, is you're trying to help people become more conscious of themselves, but the life choices they have, and that you're not advocating for any particular type of political action, but there could be you could look at it from that at that way by saying, like, if you're just looking for people to be more invested in the choices they're making, and that could be the choices they're making as consumers, like, what are they mm-hmm. putting into their bodies?
Yes, absolutely.
So are you buying bottled water, which, you know, it just adds to the whole plastic problem,
mm-hmm.
or are you looking to buy a water filter? What are you? But just thinking about your water source,
yes.
sources, and then how you're consuming that, as aside from just your food sources, but mm-hmm. then also, what are you putting into the water system? Do mm-hmm. do you flush your old medications down the toilet? Which yeah. is the worst place to put your old medications that potentially enters our groundwater.
Worst place is to put them in your body.
And then you
unless
pee,
you're
and then you pee it out, it ends up in the toilet anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you're in a big crisis,
it's your best
not to. Yeah. It's best not right? to take those regularly.
Yeah. But yeah, I hear you're saying, what choices are we making as a species now too? Again, like glyphosate in our land, you know, the amount of chemicals we dump on our land, and all that runs off into the Mississippi River. You know, I don't know if you know this doctor named Dr. Zach Bush. Have you heard of him?
I have not.
He's worth looking into, folks. He has really taken the time to really look at how glyphosate is affecting our health with people and
our land.
He's
one of the world leaders in the biome.
Yeah,
the
like
body's
your own
biome,
microbiome.
The earth
your
biome, microbiome.
Yeah, so, but then it's, again, the consciousness or being making the best choices for ourselves and each other, and how we're caring for the place we all have to live in together. Like, we, this is it. This is our globe. Right. Like, a long time ago, remember, Paul, we knew these, you know, people say, like, Mother Earth is going to be fine. She, you know, you can see what happened at Chernobyl, right? I mean, humans did crazy things there, right? And now they show this footage of, have you seen the footage of Chernobyl where there's animals and plants growing and, you know, other live things are living there, because Mother Nature is the divine cosmic, call it what you want.
It's just, but
the,
like, engulfing
the life force energy, right? So Mother Earth is going to get through all this. It's whether we as a species are going to be here to see how she handles our our destruction and our behavior on this place we call home, right?
Yeah,
that's
just a
the
blip.
Scary part. Yeah, we're just a blip.
Humanity's just a blip.
We're just one species, right? We're just a species.
4 billion years out there.
Right? And so
sphere's been spinning.
And I truly want to expand this to it's not just about nutrition. You know, people can really get into nutrition. It is, when you see these blue zones, these guys are out having a glass of wine, dancing at 85, 90, 95. You know, they're out being with their people. They're connecting with the outdoors. They're still walking, you know, even if they're maybe using a cane. But their view on life is so joyful and so, you know, they realize that they are in charge, you know. Or maybe they don't. Maybe it's just natural for them.
I want to reference something in Greg Braden's book. He was going around the planet and interviewing these what do you call them? Centenarians? People over 100?
100.
And he said this people. One woman was, you know, born in 1888. She was 120 years old at the time of the story. And she, you know, and the people said, what do you attribute to your long life? And she said, she didn't need to think long before she answered, it was love. She said she felt important in the lives of her family. She felt connected. She felt needed. She felt she was contributing to the lives of the people she loved in the way that they needed to be there. It was a feeling that drew her to the full life each and every day. She felt love. And that goes right down to the core. Like, what are we sometimes creating in our world again? Isolation with our own little phone units, and
the elderly watching TV all the time. You know, just like instead of being out in community. And that's part of our downfalls as the American, or at least the Western world, where we're our families are more separated. Yeah. You know, especially when their kids are moving in all different places, and it's and then next you know you're driving 3-4 hours to take care of your elderly parent because you live 4, 5, 6 right. hours away, and you start feeling guilty about it.
And then we create in society these homes for them. And, you know, like my mother, we made that decision this summer. And, you know, she's in one of those elderly facilities. And,
the people,
you know,
are sweet.
The people are sweet, caring for her, and it's really sweet. She even said, she said, oh, on Sunday we all went down and watched the football game together, you know. So I thought that was cute that she left her individual room, which she intended to sit in, and participated. So, you know, we're doing, as a society, we're trying to make it a better situation, but yet we're not doing the nucleus like we used to do. Like, we'll take care of grandma,
right.
You know.
Or grandma stayed at home.
Yeah.
Or grandma still has a purpose. Yeah. You know, still.
Even better. Know, even better, right.
Yeah, still has a purpose, still being a part of the you know, the
needed to feel love, right? Yeah. Like we see our Amish neighbors, Fred. You mentioned the Amish. Like, you often see that in their housing situations. They'll have a little. Some really good friends of ours. They had a little, just a little, like a one room unit, big as this room we're in, where Grandma stayed, and she had her own little cook stove in there. She could cook when she wanted, but sometimes she'd walk next door, which is really close. You know, literally just next door, and go eat with the bigger extended family.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Another one of those blue zones. When you get to it, they go to Guatemala, and there's a region in Costa Rica, and one of the things that they decide is providing longevity for the centenarians, or the not quite centenarians in that area, is that they they're poor for one thing, but they also make their own food. They're making their own food, so they're involving the older people in the making of the tortillas and everything. So there's
gardening,
activity.
Yeah.
They're together with the other members of the family unit, but they're on their feet. They're moving, and they're making their own food. And then that brings us once again to food choices. Reminds me of Michael Pollan's book?
Oh yeah.
It's really small, and the first chapter is only like one paragraph, and it's called Food Rules, I think, or something like that. And one of the first chapters or two is basically eat like your grandparents.
Yeah.
And to, you know, basically you're eating things that don't have all the preservatives in it.
Is it the Omnivore's Dilemma?
If you're making it yourself.
Is it that book, the Omnivore's Dilemma?
No, I think it was called Food Rules. I know he's done more than one book.
Yeah, and I mean, the Bright Line Eating, one of the ones that talked about the three meals a day. Our parents didn't snack, and if they did, it was a fruit or a trunk of dried meat.
Okay.
You know, so that process of, you know, they ate real food.
Yeah.
And now we are in a situation.
Without chemicals, preservation.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot harder today because you have to read the labels. You have to make choices that are, you know, the gardens, not that long ago, 1950s and 60s, the cities, Chicago, Milwaukee, the majority of people had a garden. They had their own garden in there. You know, that is like, poof, that's all gone. You know, so if we don't bring that back...
And it is being, you hear people just today, like in one of our little social groups we were chatting, and someone said, if all of our yards were food farms or mini food, whatever, you know, that'd be so good for us, right?
Right.
And there's starting to, the vibes are out there, right? I feel like there's a
nobody
shift.
Nobody wants that back, though.
Yeah.
Nobody does?
Well, don't you love the idea that you can go into the food corp right now and get oranges? You can get six different types of fruits that don't grow around here.
I know.
Right? And you can buy almost any type of meat. And you don't have to do a single bit of the dirty work.
I think that's what it's talked about in the Omnivore's Dilemma.
My arm's up. I'm lazy.
But he talks about that, like,
you're going to have to go back to eating roots during the winter.
Right, right.
And no citrus.
But he talks about the Omnivore's, I think, the food process. That's a whole other show we could do for an hour. We're having to round up our hour. But that, what does it take to get that orange to us? You know, as far as
environmental impact.
Yeah, like, you know, as fun as I love my grapes I'm chowing on at lunch here when we're done, I love them. But they don't grow here in 20 below, do they?
Organic strawberries. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a reason why you're paying $5 for those. Because you couldn't get them otherwise.
This has been a fascinating hour. I think we're getting close to wrapping up. Fred, are there any other words that you want to just share, like, after our stimulating conversation about longevity and anthropology and...
Oh, I don't know. I would just say keep trying.
Well, choices.
Yeah, keep trying, right?
Keep trying.
I know people say, it's choice. It is. It's choices and consequences. We have the science now that talks about us being able to change our biology by changing what we choose in this world. Consciousness does matter, and the choices you make after your consciousness also matter a lot. And that we can be the best human we can be, the healthiest human we can be, socially, individually, and socially, it makes a difference. And
it
you
does.
Can, you can, if you have a goal in your life that you want to not only live a long life, but you want to live a healthy, long, stimulating life, that mostly is a personal choice.
Yeah.
You know,
and we need each other. You know, right now, I think humans are pretty social creatures. So that idea of community and gathering and, you know, reaching out to your neighbors and having those conversations and gathering for Blue Zone dinners.
Joy does matter. Joy changes your physiology, changes your field, changes the world by the individual choices we make.
If our 120-year-old Miriam in this book, you know, she said, it's because I feel needed and I feel
loved.
So feel loved and I feel needed by my people. So let's hold that together in our thoughts, right? As we all age, that let's stay active, stay needed, stay engaged as an individual.
Stay connected to your neighbors. Stay connected to your family and your community. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Fred, for joining us. That was super fun.
Thank you.
Super fun.
Glad to come.
Did you ever thought you were going to be able to use that $80,000 degree? You just did it right now.
Thanks for listening, everybody, to the Heart of Wellness Show. Have a fabulous day.